The apostles gathered together with Jesus and reported all they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while." People were coming and going in great numbers, and they had no opportunity even to eat. So they went off in the boat by themselves to a deserted place. People saw them leaving, and many came to know about it. They hastened there on foot from all the towns and arrived at the place before them. When he disembarked and saw the vast crowd, his heart was moved with pity for them, for they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. The Gospel of the Lord. One of the benefits of being assigned to a high school is that I have summers essentially off, so I always go somewhere, and usually for a long time. But the more of the world that I see and the more places that I go and celebrate Mass, the more confirmed I am in my belief that there's no place like St. Thomas. So this really is a beautiful community, and it's good to be home again. That doesn't have anything to do with my homily. I just wanted to tell you that. There's a simple little line here at the end of the Gospel. And it's one of those many, many lines that can be easy to overlook, but I think are beautifully important. It's this line that he disembarked. So just to remind ourselves of the context, right? The disciples have been out preaching and doing miracles and all that, and Jesus wants them to rest. He wants to go away with them to a place of solitude and prayer. But the people seek him out, and the crowds find him. And it says he disembarked and he looked at the vast crowd and his heart was moved with pity for them, for they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. His heart was moved with pity because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so he began to teach them. Now contrast this line from the gospel with the way that, let's say, the modern world. I always love to preach against the modern world. It's so vague, right? But it's the ocean that we swim in. Contrast this with the way that the modern world talks about the Christian faith. We've heard it so many times and in so many ways, sometimes said explicitly, sometimes just subtly delivered as a kind of subtext or hidden message. We've been told so many times that essentially Christianity is something that represses our humanity. It's something dark. It's something fearful. It's something to make us feel bad about ourselves. It's something ultimately that I don't know who they are, bishops or something, apparently use as a way of wielding power and controlling people. Right? And this is in contrast with, when we talk about modernism, by the way, modernism is first of all a philosophy. And modernism really cropped up about 500 or 600 years ago. And it led to what we call humanism. You've probably heard that term, and sometimes people will very openly and cheerfully identify themselves, say, well, you know, what's your philosophy, what's your religion? They'll say, I'm a humanist, or a secular humanist. And what humanism is essentially, when we boil it down, it's kind of like the worship of humanity. But the humanistic ideals are essentially that humanity can solve all of its problems, that things are just getting better and better and better all the time, and that we have the goodness within us, but also the knowledge and the power, which is always increasing, to basically make everything okay and to fix all of our problems. And so it's not for no reason that humanism arose beside like great scientific advancements, right? Because as we begin to know more about the world and we're more able to manipulate our environment, it kind of gave us the illusion that we no longer need God. And so as humanism emerged as a philosophy, as a way of seeing the world, as a way of living, humanism sort of made itself the enemy of Christianity, or I should say made Christianity the enemy of it. And the humanistic mind would say, you know, we are trying to throw off the medieval shackles of religious superstition. We're trying to throw off all these things that are unreasonable and that bind us and don't let us live freely and don't let us be happy. We're trying to throw those things off. And so for a long time, and more and more and more, the church is being cast as something dark and controlling and oppressive, and essentially made to feel make you feel bad about yourself. Now, that way of looking at Christianity, I just ask you, think for yourselves, how well does that jive? Does that phrase still mean anything? How well does that work or complement this line where Jesus sees the people who, by the way, have sought him out because they've seen something in him and they want to be near him. They want something from him. So they seek him out. They find him. Even as he tries to go away for a time of prayer and silence with his disciples, they seek him out and he has pity on them, for they're like sheep without a shepherd. Now, let's take a step back from the polemic of, you know, what humanism is and how it views Christianity. And let's look at the world that we actually live in. Let's look at the world that was wrought by humanism. Let's look at what happened when Western civilization threw off the shackles of Christian superstition. Things have actually gotten pretty dark, haven't they? Who could look at the 20th century and say, yeah, this was a big step forward for humanity? Who could look at what's happened in the last 100 or 200 years and honestly say, you know what, we're doing just fine by ourselves, thank you very much. I was in Europe for most of the summer and I didn't get a lot of news. I don't read a lot of news anyway, but I got even less over there. But one of the few stories, I don't know why, that trickled into my awareness is that we had at the beginning of summer apparently a rash of celebrities committing suicide. Now, this is very interesting to me, and I would love to see, and if any of you know a study like this, please tell me. I would love to see a study about the demographics of suicide, because my contention, my guess, is that it's more prevalent among the wealthy. And why not? Because somebody who is, let's say, a celebrity, and they're rich and they're famous, and they basically have the ability to provide themselves with anything that the world tells us is necessary for their happiness. They hold that power in their hands. There's nothing that money can buy. There's no door that fame can open that's not open to these people. And they still find an emptiness in their life. And if you have the ability to buy anything that you need, and you have all the things available to you the world tells you are good for your happiness, and you're still not happy, then where do you turn? Look at the literature of the last 100, 200 years. And I don't just mean like airport novels, you know, like the famous literature, the stuff we read like in high school. It's not very uplifting. Look at a lot of the cinema, and again, not like the Marvel Avenger movies, but the art house films that win awards and things like that. A lot of it is not very hopeful. If we look even at the art that our culture produces, we see that there is a lot of sorrow and nihilism and a sense of like the emptiness and the meaninglessness and the directionlessness of humanity. Humanism hasn't actually delivered us a lot of hope. And I could sit here all day long and give you examples of how the world is lost. And you could give me examples all day long of things I've never even thought of how the world is lost. But let's just look at that honestly and stop allowing ourselves to believe that it's Christianity that paints a bleak, dark picture. Because things have gotten really bleak and dark since the bulk of our civilization has left Christianity behind. But here's how, brothers and sisters, here's how we play into the hands of this mentality. Is, first of all, many of us are not courageous enough to preach about Christianity to the people in our lives. And I include myself in this criticism. We are often guilty, those of us who do have the courage to say something, we're often guilty of limiting ourselves to what I call moralism, right? We're often limited to simply calling out sinful actions and condemning them. For many of us who do speak out, whether it be to our friends and family or in things that we post on Facebook or whatever, those of us who do speak out, so often all we really say is, this is bad, and that's sinful, and this is condemned, and our country needs to be delivered from this. And that's all that many people outside the church, that's their only experience of Christians or of Catholics talking about their religion, is condemning the way that they live. Now, it is sometimes a charitable thing to call people out and to invite them to live a different way, right? And here there's a double standard as well, because when groups of people evangelize about healthy food and warn us of the dangers of eating, processed foods or gluten or whatever, when people evangelize about the damage that we're doing to the planet through greenhouse gas emissions, when people evangelize about, overfishing the tuna population, or people evangelize about how, you're going to kill yourself with cigarettes, we kind of hold them up as heroes and say, look, they're fighting to make the world a better place. They're trying to warn you of these dangers. But if somebody tries to warn us about moral dangers, we very quickly label that hate speech, roundly mock it, and push it aside. So there is a double standard here, and I want to acknowledge that. However, shouldn't our moral exhortations of the people in our lives happen within the context of evangelizing about the shepherd that we have found who leads us to greener pastures? If you're regulars, you've probably heard me say something like this or about this on a number of occasions, but I really don't believe for a moment that most of us are here because we're afraid. I don't believe for a moment that most of us were here last week and here today and be here next week and we'll keep coming back again and again and again just because we're trying to escape the wrath of an angry God. Because my experience says that fear does not sustain people in the religious life. I really believe in my heart of hearts that we are here because we have found something that makes our lives better. We found something that gives meaning to our existence. We found something that seems to be an answer to our deepest questions, even if we can't elucidate what exactly it is that we found. We're here because we found something. And shouldn't that be what we share with the world? Our brothers and sisters are lost. This world is like a bunch of sheep without a shepherd. Shouldn't the good news that we fearlessly offer to those people around us, those people that we have contact with, shouldn't we be saying to them, listen, it doesn't have to be this way. I have found a better way. I have found a shepherd. And this shepherd leads me to green pastures. And this shepherd teaches me many things. And because I follow this man, my life has meaning. And I have hope. And I have found some semblance of happiness, even now, in addition to the happiness that I hope for eternity. I have found a better way, and that way is Jesus Christ, and I want you to meet him too.